I was asked to give a wrap-up also for the credit risk part of the course, so here it is. So if you go to lecture 9, page 2, then there's a list of the various components of credit risk, and you can read the list yourself. But the important thing is that in this core part of the course, we do not handle one of the components on the list, and that is timing risk, the risk which is connected to the uncertainness of the exact time point of the arrival risk. And of course, that's important too. If you're looking, say, at the risk over a year, it's a bit quite different if the default happens in January 3 or in December 3. So time risk is also important, but we don't handle it here. So what we look at are static credit portfolios, that is, portfolios where you do not think about the timing risk. And the important part is to have default dependency, that there's a dependence between default for different obligors. So on page 3, we take a detour and introduce something very important and completely central in probability theory, and very central in the probability theory of finance. All very large part of the tools which are used in finance, probabilistic tools, they are based on conditional expectation and on conditioning. And this is, of course, widely used in all applications of probability theory and all parts of statistics. So on page 3 of lecture 9, we define the conditional expectations. And that's a little bit more abstract than the rest of the course. And there's notations you might not be so used to, but it's not dangerous. So we start with a definition. L2 is the space of all random variables x which have finite second moment. So L2 might or might not be a new notation for you, but it's just all you look at all random variables which you have in sort of some setting, and then you only look at those which have a finite second moment. And the next step is that we have, in addition to this, we have a random variable z, which also has finite second moment, and we denote by L2 of z the space of all random variables y such that y equals g of c for some function g and y in L2. So, I mean, we just look at all the L2 of z, which of course is a subset of L2. That's just the set of all random variables which can be expressed as a function of C. So you have your C, and then you look at any function of C, and you get a Y. And all these Ys are this base L2 of C. So L2 of C might, for example, it contains the function g equals the square root of c, so you could have y equals square root of c, or y equals 2c plus 4, and so on. Any function g of c which gives you an y which has a finite second moment, that gives you an element in the space L2 of z. So that's the notation. L2 is finite second moment, L2 of z is finite second moment and being a function of z. So the next step is to define the conditional expectation. And the motivation then is what you probably have seen, and what it's easy to derive otherwise, is that the expectation of a random variable x is the value of mu, value the constant mu that minimizes the quantity, the expected value of x minus mu squared. So the mean mu approximates x as well as is possible in the L2 sense. The L2 difference, or the square difference between x and mu, is smaller than or equal to the difference between x and any other constant. So this, inspired by this, the conditional expectation denoted E of x bar z, E of x given z is defined as follows. It is a random variable, it's not a constant. In the standard expectation, the is a constant, but here we have a random variable. And it's a random variable which belongs to y, which belongs to L2 of z, and minimizes the square distance, so it minimizes the expectation of x minus y squared. So to find the conditional expectation, you get the random variable which has a form g of z, and which is such that g of that the expectation of x minus g of z squared is as small as possible. So that's the definition of the conditional expectation. And you can think, if you're used to thinking in projections, then this is the projection of x onto the space L2 of z in the L2 sense. So this is the conditional expectation. And sort of a detour again, the conditional expectation can be defined also without the restriction of having finite second mean. It's enough that there is a finite mean, that x has a finite mean, and y has a finite mean. But this is not a part of this course. It's a more general and more abstract notation. So moving to page 4 of lecture 2, there's a number of to the two main properties of conditional expectations. So these are the properties 1 and 2. And the first one is that if for any x with finite second moment, then if you take the expectation of the conditional expectation, you get the expectation back. So the formula is that the expectation of E of x given z is just the expectation of x. So a way of computing mu, the expectation of x, is just to, you can somehow find the expectation of x given z for some random variable z, and then you take the expectation of this random variable. The second important property is that if you have a random variable, again square integrable, and which is such that it belongs to L2 of z, that is, y is a function of z, y equals g of z for some g, then the conditional expectation of the product of y and x given z is just y times the expectation of x given z. So if y is a function of z, you can take it outside of the conditional expectation. And this is just like for ordinary expectations. If you look at the expectation of a constant times a random variable, then that's just a constant times the expectation of the random variable. And then this makes two very intuitive, for if z is given, then if you know z, if you condition on z, well, then you know what y is too, because y is a function of z. So it acts like a constant and you can take it outside. The next line is that you can define the conditional variance just in the same way as the unconditional variance. That is, you take the conditional expectation of the square of x minus the expectation of the conditional expectation of x squared. It's just like for the ordinary variance, except you have conditioning with z on both places. And with this notation, it's easy to derive the very important and useful formula that the variance of x can be expressed as the expectation of the variance of x given z plus the variance of e of x given z. So here you should remember, for this to make sense, you have to remember that the variance of x given z is a random variable, because the components are random variables, and e of x given z is also a random variable by the definition. So this is a very important formula, a very useful formula. And as a special case, we get conditional probabilities. That is, we define the conditional probabilities of A given Z as the expectation of the indicator function of A given CZ. And you remember, the indicator function is a function which is 1 if A occurs and 0 otherwise. So the simplest example is maybe if you have a random variable x which only can take two values a and b, then and you let a be the event that x takes the value little a, then the conditional probability that x equals a given z is the expectation of the indicator function x equals a given z. So this indicator function is a random variable which takes a value 1 if x happens to equal a, and which is 0 if x equals b. Okay, so going back from the detour and back to the course, the simplest model for a static credit risk portfolio is that you have M obligors, M loans, outstanding loans, and then you look at defaults up to fixed time t, and if an obligor defaults, then the loss from the default is L. So the loss is assumed to be the same for all obligors. This is maybe a fairly strong simplification. We'll talk a little bit more about it in the very end of this wrap-up and in the end of the course. Now, the important definition is we let xi be a random variable such that xi equals 1 if obligor I defaults before time t and 0 otherwise. So xi is actually an indicator variable for the event that the obligor I defaults before t. And in the very simplest model, we assume that the x's are iid, that is, they are independent, they have identical distributions. So there's no dependence between them, and they look completely the same. And then the notation, we say that they all have the same probability of default, that is the probability of default, the probability that xi equals 1. It has some value p, where p has to be between 0 and 1, of course, since xi is between 0 and 1. And if the probability of xi equals 1 is p, then of course the probability that xi equals 0 is 1 minus p, because that's the only alternative. Then the total credit loss in the portfolio is denoted LM, and it's just the sum of the losses for the individual obligor. And obligor I, if obligor 1 defaults, then X1 is 1 and the loss is L. So if obligor 1 defaults, you get a loss L from obligor 1. If not, you get a loss 0. That is, then again, it's XI equals L. So the loss from obligor 1 is XIL. The loss from X1L. The loss from obligor 2 is X2L, and so on. And the total loss is the sum of the individual losses. So LM is the sum that where I goes from 1 to M of XIL. And then you can take the L outside of the sum. So you get L times the sum I goes from 1 to N, M of XI. And then you can denote the sum by NM. That is NM equals the sum of the XIs. So NM is just the number of defaults of the portfolio up to time T. And then, of course, since L is a constant, we have that the probability that LM equals KL is just the same as the probability that NM equals K. That is, to say it in another way, the probability that the loss is KL is the same as saying that there is K losses. So if one want to know anything about LM, it's enough to know the distribution of NM. And of course, if you remember the binomial distribution, this is completely the definition of binomial distribution. You have a sum of events which may occur or not occur. They are independent and they have the same probability. So it's clear that NM has a binomial distribution with parameters M and P. Okay, I'll take a break now and come back in the next sound clip.